I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, October 18th. So who heard Mara Liasson on NPR over the weekend reporting on Donald Trump happy to indulge what might seem like crazy talk to most people? If the Republicans take back the House in the midterm elections next year, they might elect him, not a member of Congress, as Speaker of the House. Who knew you could even do that? But apparently you can. That kind of talk is one reason that Congressman Adam Schiff wrote his new book, Midnight in Washington, How We Almost Lost Our Democracy and Still Could. Of course, you know Adam Schiff is one of the main impeachment managers when Trump was trying to get Ukraine to announce a phony investigation of Joe Biden before the phony claim that Biden's election was rigged and riling up the crowd for insurrection on January 6th, shouting that he would never concede. But Donald Trump, private citizen, as Speaker of the House? With me now is Congressman Adam Schiff, Democrat from the Southern California district that includes Pasadena, West Hollywood, and elsewhere around there. We'll also touch on his party's high-stakes negotiations, still ongoing, of course, over the physical and human infrastructure bills and how crucial those might be to keeping the House majority in Democratic hands next year, the surest path to not having Speaker Trump. Congressman Schiff, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Can you explain to many listeners who might be baffled right now, hearing this for the first time and asking themselves, can they really do that, appoint a non-member of Congress as Speaker of the House?
They can't do that. It is not a requirement that the Speaker actually be a member of the House. And while I don't think that's likely to happen, who knows? But the practical matter is, if Kevin McCarthy were to become Speaker, there's nothing that Kevin McCarthy wouldn't do if Trump told him to. And so functionally, Donald Trump would be the Speaker. And that is a terrifying prospect. We cannot allow someone of that lack of ethics, that lack of decency, to ever regain power in this country. But yes, technically, he could actually be the Speaker. Functionally, if McCarthy were ever to set foot in that office, Trump could tell him whatever Trump wanted him to do.
I guess that's one way to look at it. But would that person, Donald Trump or whoever, get a vote like an elected member if a non-House member was elected Speaker?
They would not get a vote, but they could essentially run the House with the other duties that the Speaker has and exert enormous influence over public policy. But my understanding of it is that they would not have a vote.
Right. And I hear that you think the Trump scenario is unlikely. I think it's unlikely, but Trump is indulging this talk. And so just one more thing on this, because part of Mara Liasson's analysis was the politics that could make this possible, which would be that Trump is the most influential Republican, just as you're saying he could dictate to a Speaker Kevin McCarthy what to do. And in so many congressional districts, he could potentially bully the local Republican congressperson to vote for him for Speaker rather than McCarthy by threatening to have someone primary that congressperson. So as an observer of House politics, do you think that could conceivably happen, that he could have that much sway in that particular way?
Yes. I think we have to admit that that is certainly possible. It may not be probable, but it is certainly possible. After all, this is a man who incited an insurrection that put the lives of members of Congress in jeopardy. And even after the insurrection, those members of the GOP were back on the House floor, most of them still trying to overturn the election, still would not discard Donald Trump as president or presidential candidate, even though he had brought such disaster upon the country. So he apparently has an iron grip on the GOP at the moment, and it is very hazardous to Republican members to defy him in any way.
Congressman Adam Schiff is our guest. If you're just joining us, his new book is called Midnight in Washington, How We Almost Lost Our Democracy and Still Could. For the Democrats to keep the House and prevent any of this, you might need to show you can govern even within your own party by getting to yes on both the physical infrastructure bill and the human infrastructure bill, or reconciliation bill, as it's often called. Do you think that's necessary to keeping power in the House next year?
I do think it's very important to keeping power in the House. And I think it's also very important to showing that our democracy can work. Our democracy is very much on the ballot for so many reasons, but among them is the fact that at the end of the day, a government, if it's going to persist, needs to be able to deliver and meet the needs of its people. So there is a very strong policy imperative to make sure that we expand Medicare to help seniors with their eye care and their dental and their hearing, to expand child care, to expand early childhood education, help kids with college, deal with climate change, paid family leave, all of these things enormously popular, enormously important to the country. I think the policy imperative is so great it will get done, but also the political imperative. You know, my feeling is if we can't get these two bills done, then we might as well just walk across the aisle and hand the keys over to the other side and say, you know, we're not interested in driving. Why don't you go ahead and take the wheel? And I just can't imagine that any of my colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle are prepared to do that. I'm certainly not.
People may think of January 6th and Stop the Steal, that lie, as different from the events that caused the Trump and Ukraine impeachment that you helped to lead. But how much do you see them as parts of a whole?
You know, I write about this a great deal in the book. They're really a natural continuation, actually, of several things. First, when Donald Trump was able to escape any accountability for inviting Russian interference in our election and lying to cover it up, it was the very next day after Bob Mueller testified, after Donald Trump felt that he had escaped the jailer, the very next day he was on the phone with the president of yet a different country, this time Ukraine, but once again seeking foreign help in his election. And when he was acquitted of that crime in the Senate during the first impeachment trial, I think you can draw a straight line to even greater abuses of his power that ultimately led to that insurrection. So one thing proceeded from another, and I have to say, were we ever to return him to the Oval Office, you could expect that continuing progression to more and more serious abuses of power to take place.
Congressman Adam Schiff with us. His new book, Midnight in Washington, How We Almost Lost Our Democracy and Still Could. And I should mention that he's doing a 92nd Street Y event tonight. It's at 7 o'clock in conversation with Ron Chernow, who wrote the Hamilton biography that the play was based on, among other things. So 7 o'clock tonight, Adam Schiff with Ron Chernow at the 92nd Street Y. Is that an in-person event? Are you in New York right now?
I am. It is in person, and it's going to be wonderful to see people again in three dimensions.
Indeed. You know, we got the sad and shocking news this morning that General Colin Powell died from COVID complications. And among many things, of course, he was both the first Black Secretary of State and first Black Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman. He was a child of the South Bronx here in New York and of the Jamaican immigrant parents who raised him here. He was 84 years old. Did you know Colin Powell?
I did. I can't say that I knew him well, but I have met him on a couple occasions. And I think we lost a great patriot. It's really a terrible loss. And I think he served the country very well and very ably. He recognized that the appearance that he made to push the intelligence on Iraq was a terrible mistake. But I think he had a very distinguished career, and the country is really, sad, appropriately so, to lose him.
You know, I was looking back at that February 2003 pre-Iraq war speech to the UN, trying to convince the world that there were weapons of mass destruction when it turned out that there were no weapons of mass destruction. And a lot of people say Colin Powell lied to the world. Now, for you as a leading member of the Intelligence Committee, this is in your portfolio to some degree. I looked at a quote that he gave PBS Frontline years later. He said it was deeply troubling, and I think it was a great intelligence failure on our part, because the problems that existed in that national intelligence estimate should have been recognized and caught earlier by the intelligence community. That's a later Colin Powell quote. So I'm curious, Congressman Schiff, if you have an opinion, lie, because remember from the time, maybe you were one of the Democrats saying it, Bush lies, who dies, about WMDs. Was it a lie by Colin Powell? Was it a lie to Colin Powell? Or was it an honest intelligence failure?
I don't think it was a lie by Colin Powell in the sense of that he knew the intelligence was flawed, but he was willing to misrepresent it to the American people. I was not a member of the Intelligence Committee at the time, and I was misled by the same intelligence and made the same mistake. I do think now that we have a fuller picture of what that intelligence was and the dissenting voices within the intelligence community that really weren't aired to the degree that they should have been, that others in the administration, others in the Bush administration, were hyping the intelligence. And I recall in particular being at a meeting at the White House prior to the vote in the Iraq War and asking George Tenet, who was at the time the director of the CIA and had served in Democratic administrations and Republican administrations, and asking him about the strength of the intelligence on Iraq on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being purely speculative and 10 being absolutely certain that Iraq had this ongoing nuclear program, nuclear weapons program, and he was a 10. And I would come to subsequently learn that the intelligence really did not back that up, I think, in any way.
Hmm. Does Powell come up in your book in any way, like as a previous kind of Republican or anything like that?
I don't refer to Powell specifically, but I talk about how my family, in a way, I was born bipartisan. My mother's family were all Republicans. My father's family were all Democrats. I have a wonderful photograph in the book of my grandfather with Eisenhower in Henry Cabot Lodge when my grandfather was a delegate for Eisenhower. And that was a time when, you know, there were Rockefeller Republicans. That branch of the party really doesn't exist anymore. But we desperately need a Republican Party to be a party of ideas again. At the moment, it has devolved into a cult around the former president and an autocratic cult at that. And as long as it is not a party of ideas, there's really no accommodating them. They have to be beaten at the polls because right now they are holding up Viktor Orban, the wannabe dictator in Hungary, as their preferred model. They're hosting conservative conventions, political conventions in Budapest to tout that model and really moving dramatically away from the proud legacy our country has of being a leading democracy.
So to that point, the subtitle of your book is Midnight. The title is Midnight in Washington. The subtitle is How We Almost Lost Our Democracy and Still Could. On the still could part, looking ahead further to 2024, whether it's Trump or another Republican on the ballot, one of the things I know you're concerned about that I think it's worth saying out loud is these new voting laws being passed in Republican legislature states, and not even so much on the part that I think makes the news most of the time, which is making it hard to vote by mail or making it hard to vote on the weekends, those sorts of things. But these legislatures giving themselves the power to actually nullify the real results. So can you talk about how that would work and where you're seeing new laws like that that concern you?
Absolutely. And I think you've really put your finger on it. The laws to disenfranchise people, particularly people of color, are vile and dangerous and a return to Jim Crow. But these other laws that are stripping independent elections officials of their duties and handing them over to partisan legislatures or partisan boards, or attacking and really driving out lower level independent elections officials and replacing them with sycophants of the former president is, I think, the most direct threat to our democracy. As a member of the January 6th Select Committee, I have to acknowledge there may be another attack on the Capitol. But if there is, it will fail like the last one. But where they may succeed in overturning our democracy is by overturning the next presidential election through the use of these quasi-legal means, these mechanisms they're now setting up around the country. It seems the lesson that Donald Trump and the Republican Party leadership took from the failed insurrection is the way to make it succeed is not a bigger, more violent attack on the Capitol, But if they couldn't get Brad Raffensperger, the former, well, the current Secretary of State in Georgia, if they couldn't get him to find 11,780 votes that don't exist, they want to make sure that in the next election they have somebody who will. And this is how democracies come to an end. It's not always through violent means. It's, I think, more often by using the instruments of a democracy against itself.
You made a nice Freudian slip there, calling Brad Raffensperger the former Secretary of State of Georgia, even though he's still technically in office. That Georgia bill takes the power of certification away from him, doesn't it?
That's my understanding, yes. And it's being replicated in other parts of the country as well. And this is just a clear and present danger to our democracy. But I do want to underscore, because one of the reasons I chose the title of Midnight in Washington is it may be the darkest moment of every day, midnight, everywhere in the world. But it's also a hopeful time, because what follows is filled with light. And I believe that we're going to get through this. I really believe it in my core. And I believe it because of a lot of people that inspired me over the last 4 years who stepped in this breach. People like Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch and Fiona Hill and Alexander Vindman and Bill Taylor. People like Dan Coats, the Republican head of the intelligence communities, who wouldn't lie to suit Donald Trump and lost his job over it, as did so many others who were willing to stand up and be counted. And I fully believe that those examples will lead the way, and that our democracy will continue, because there are far more of us in this country that love our democracy than there are people that are willing to tear it down.
California Congressman Adam Schiff, his new book is called Midnight in Washington, How We Almost Lost Our Democracy and Still Could. And again, he will be at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 7 o'clock in conversation with Ron Chernow. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us today. Enjoy your time in New York.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.